This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 24, The Growth Mindset. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we unpick the idea of the growth mindset, what it means, how you can bring it into your game, or how you can bring it to games of other people. It's a really powerful tool for coaches and players. And we also help a couple of players with a couple of problems. We have question about a sidearm and whether it can actually replace bowlers, and we also talk about what you need to do to increase your pace if you're a fast bowler but you haven't quite got the fastness yet. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This, of course, as you probably know by now, is your guide to better cricket. We spend half an hour or so chatting about the game, helping people improve, and hopefully having an entertaining time along the way. My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things here, and helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches. The first is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Gareth. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, very well.
Good. Got exciting times up ahead. It must be getting to the peak of your season in the school now.
Yeah, it is. It's our last week of term. It's a pretty busy one. We beat Wellington School and Sam Curran on Monday in the T20. So the guys are off to Arundel for the finals day down there, which is good. The 17s are in the semi-final of a competition that I think you won last year, Sam. Was that right?
Yes, that was that was really good day out for us last year, actually.
But, yeah.
Who have you guys got in that one?
Somebody down in Essex, not quite sure, not heard of them before. So we got them. 15s got regional finals tomorrow, and the 14s are in the regional final on Friday. So yeah, it's a busy old time.
Fantastic. And what wonderful undermining skills that, not saying you've never heard of the school before. It's going to put them on the back foot straight away.
Well, it'll probably motivate them to pull out the performance of their lives. But I hadn't heard of a school. I have had a look at their website, and they run a very good cricket program, which is linked to Essex, So, they're going to be useful. A good test for the lads.
And that other voice you heard was Sam Lavery, who's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. Similar story for you, I suppose. Lavers, lots of action?
Yeah, it's kind of it's our unofficial cricket week this week, really. So we've got MCC today. We've got Xavier College from Australia are over, and they're doing the rounds around the country at the moment with some good fixtures. So we're playing them tomorrow, then it's Old Boys Friday, then a block fixture Saturday, and then South African touring team Monday. So there's quite a lot going on around other things with knockout games and a few things still going on. So, yeah, hell of a lot of cricket to fit in into the next sort of week or so. But, lots of exciting stuff and great opportunities for all the guys.
Yeah, well, it's a long old winter, isn't it? So you've got to get stuck in when it's busy like that.
Absolutely.
Obviously, you guys are both doing a lot of school cricket, and kind of related to that was the topic that I wanted to speak about this week, which is this idea of a growth mindset, which has become very popular in recent times. And I think everyone can learn from it, whatever you're doing in cricket, whether it's coaching, whether it's playing, whether it's club cricket, school cricket. So I thought maybe we could have a little chat about it, how much you've sort of brought this idea into the way that you coach, this idea of a growth mindset, and first of all, what it is really. Second of all, how much you've brought it in, and how much you think you can help bring it in more for players who are coming into the game. So, Gareth, I know you've written about the growth mindset on Pitch Vision Academy before. So, what is it to you?
Well, I suppose fixed mindset and fixed views are things that, as coaches, I think the best coaches I've worked alongside have always challenged those fixed mindsets. So a fixed mindset, you know, would be about rain, which we're having quite a lot of in the UK. Oh, you know, we're going to be off today is a fixed mindset. And whereas a growth mindset will be, well, that isn't something that we can control. All we can do is prepare ourselves as best as can, just in the case the event comes out where it starts to be sunny. And the bottom line is, if we approach this situation situation where there's rain about in a more positive light than the opposition, then we give ourselves a better chance of success. And that's an example of a growth mindset, is how to look at stuff with potential off the back of it, as opposed to doom and gloom. And we see it a lot with batters, you know, in difficult conditions, facing a pitch that's a bit up and down, instead of seeing that that thing as a problem that's you can't get over, seeing it as a challenge to, you know, to score 30 or 40 instead of 100, and it's still to be a match-winning contribution. You know, there's lots of different examples. But as a coach, even before I understood the terminology around growth and fixed mindsets, I was always quite keen to attack and challenge those fixed views, those limited views that players, coaches, parents, and anybody else associated in the game can come out with, which are pretty prevalent. And if we can attack those and coach people in an appropriate fashion to shift from a fixed to a growth mindset, then we tend to get some sustainable and controllable results come off the back of it.
One of the things, particularly in club cricket, I think, where, you know, people are not at the top of the game, is you hear quite a lot, is I'm not very good. You know, they come up with this idea of how good they are, and that is a fixed thing. And that's when I think of a fixed mindset, I think of someone saying, I'm not very good. But when I think of a growth mindset, I think of somebody saying, I'm not very good at that yet. And that's the difference, I think, to me anyway, between someone who's fixed on whatever their ability is and someone who feels like they can improve and do things better and do things that they can control. And that's the difference between a fixed and a growth mindset to me.
The word yet is a brilliant one for anybody who's in that fix. It is a fantastic word to put on the end of a sentence. You can basically repeat their language that they've just said to you, stick the word yet on, and then back it up with something. So an example, I'm sure you've used it in the past, David, is, you know, I can't play spin. Okay, right, you can't play spin yet. And the reason why you can't play spin is because it's not something that we've covered. And one, I've showed you a few methods, when I've shown you some videos of people that play spin really well, when we've layered up our practice appropriately, you'll be in a much better position to play spin and not only survive against it, but thrive against it. And, you know, that's the way to shift from that fixed mindset, I can't play spin, and give them some potential and something to aim for.
And Leifus, what about sort of the putting this into practice in a way? So when you come across players with a fixed mindset, how do you help them learn the idea that they can grow and they can improve?
Well, I think the principle of improvement is one most people will be open to. I just think sometimes the realism of what they're trying to achieve gets a little bit clouded. So some people may. Playing spin's a good example, but some people may look at a world-class performer or someone who's the best in their team, who's considerably better than them at something, and then they'll look at their own ability levels and they'll see that there's a bit of disparity between the two, and they'll feel like getting from their ability level to where they want to be is something that's very unachievable. But if we can break that down with them and say, look, we're looking to get from this ability level, hopefully somewhere near there or hopefully even beyond there, but in doing that, we've got to go one step at a time. And it might be that we can't jump from here to there, but can we be a little bit better tomorrow? And can we be a little bit better the next day? And can we take it up in small chunks rather than looking at this enormous, scary leap, which seems impossible, and probably leaping from one ability level to another one that's significantly higher probably is impossible. So if we can just map out some progression and say, here is a process or a plan which is going to improve us. And if also along the way we can try and reevaluate how we are progressing, I think it just makes everything a little bit more structured and gives them an idea of how they're going to move along that pathway from their existing ability level to where they want to be.
I think it kind of works another way as well, in that when players feel like they're very good but haven't had the opportunities to show that, that's quite a fixed mindset as well. Instead of saying, right, I'm going to find ways to show that I'm as good as I think I am, whatever that is, rather than waiting for someone to give them the opportunity, and all that needs to happen is someone needs to come along and give them the opportunity and they can show how good they are. they can go and make those opportunities for themselves. And I see that a lot in players when they ask for a chance, you know, please give me one chance, is something that we hear a lot at Pitch Vision Academy. But to me, it's not really about giving you one chance. It's about making those chances for yourself and going and doing it repeatedly and improving repeatedly until you get to that point. So it's not just I feel like a fixed mindset isn't just a negative thing, as in I'm not very good. It's sometimes it works the other way. It says I'm too good, but I need someone else to come in and I need someone to come and give me the chance to show how good I am.
Oh, we have that a lot. We have that a lot at school, you know, with guys that aren't on academies, but actually in some cases outperform players that are on academies and are in England setups and what have you. And the bottom line is performance, isn't it? And it is continual performance. And if you continue to perform and you continue to do the right things, and at some point, especially in a game like cricket, which is a late specialisation game, at some point somebody is going to recognise that, you know, and the world is small, people know who the best players are, people talk, and those opportunities can only be created by people who consistently do the right things on a regular basis. And that's what I always say to people. So the fixed mindset is I never get the opportunity. If you keep doing what you're doing and keep performing and keep putting the work in behind it, then it is inevitable that you will get that opportunity. The only reason it won't happen, well, if you then feel sorry for yourself, bit of self-pity, and go down that trap of, oh, it's so unfair. The world is fair if you put enough effort in.
Yeah, I think ultimately people and clubs and counties, they want the best players, don't they? So they want to find you and they want you to prove that you're the best player. So if you continually prove that, they will be asking you to come along and they'll be giving you contracts and things will happen eventually, but they want you. It's not like they're wanting to give it something to someone else for the sake of it. They will want the best person for the job.
Well, I've just literally got off the phone before starting this to England's national selector, who's talking about two guys that came onto our programme at school that he wouldn't have been talking about a year ago. And they've come onto the programme with the intention of improving, have put absolutely everything into their individual development. And now I'm being called up by the national selector to ask about them and how they're going. And do you think they'll be able to do this? Do you think they'll be able to get picked for this international team? And, you know, and that's fantastic. And there's two examples of people who have taken a growth mindset into a new environment rather than thinking, oh, you know, all that happening here is that I'll keep performing and nobody will take notice.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes or no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more the team want to say. I've got the questions, so let's fire away. First question, yoga is good for cricket.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Interval training is better than jogging.
Yes.
Third question. Showing belief in your teammates builds everyone's confidence.
Yes.
Correct. Yes.
And now it's time for the question section on the show. We dip into the mailbag and we come out with a couple of questions that have been sent in to the show. The best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And if you want to send in your own question, then you can do so by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. So the first question this week is from Sam. And Sam says, I'm a pretty slow bowler, maybe 70 kilometres an hour. And because of my relatively low pace, I believe there's a lot of room for improvement. I'm 16 years old. By the age of, say, 25 years old, what would be my pace, estimated, of course, if I keep working hard and trying to get better and better? So tough to be specific about this kind of question, but what kind of indicators can we look at when we see a young player and we think, how much faster can they get if they want to improve their pace?
Well, I think the first thing you do is you look at the action, don't you? You have a look to see how many of those pace indicators that we've talked about in the past are prevalent within that action and how many are missing. You then look at to see if how many of those ones are achievable within somebody's action. And you go through it in that sequential fashion. And then obviously you've got to have a look at whether their bodies will allow them to bowl fast, because obviously it's a rigorous thing. And then you can put a plan around them from a physical perspective, which there's loads of stuff out on, which we talk about quite a few weeks on this show. So there's lots of resource out there that you can access. But ultimately, I'd first do what we call a pace matrix over in the UK, and other people have got different methodologies and different ways of going about it. But, you know, an example is, does a person have a decent pace in their run-up, because they can take that momentum into their delivery stride and their bowling action? You know, have they got a brace front leg or a leg that can support their upper body rotations later on in the delivery? Have they got a delayed arm? Would be three examples within those points that we look for that are fairly consistent with the guys who bowl at the top pace around the world.
Lavers, from a strength and conditioning point of view, perhaps, how important is it to have those indicators of strength and power from in the gym? You know, how much weight you lift, or you know, how much power work you do, and all that kind of thing.
Well, I think everyone's going to have different ambitions in terms of where they want to end up. So, definitely trying to have some kind of program in place is going to support it, though. And if you can have a program that caters for both the strength and power side of things, and it's often important that you do get your head around the difference between strength and power early on, because for a lot of people, they're two words that kind of overlap quite a lot and aren't necessarily enormously different. But actually, when you get into the kind of nitty gritty of it, they're very different in what they're actually meaning and what you would be delivering if you're delivering one session to the other. So if you're looking at a long term plan, which you are, which is fantastic, and you're not looking for results in the next 3-6 months, etc., then you've got a long time ahead. So you can be thinking about developing that strength and establishing a little bit of muscle development first of all, and then subsequently trying to convert that into some power and using a range of exercises that are going to be relevant to our bowling action. And there's loads of power related exercises which are barbell work, dumbbell work, but largely a lot of it would be med ball work as well, which are things that you can implement into a program really easily. A lot of the power stuff isn't actually that expensive, so you don't always need loads of kit to do it, because a couple of med balls are some varying range and you can be doing things there. So I would say that would have a fairly big contribution to your development, but that would be dictated to by your starting point with your action, because the bowling part of it is still the most important part of it for me. And doesn't matter how fit or strong you are, if the action is way out, then that's going to be the biggest thing to fix first of all. So think about those performance indicators that Gareth has mentioned there, and have a look at other key parts of a bowling action, which we'll have discussed here many times during the podcast. And if you're starting to get those things right, and you're starting to do quite well from the technique or technical point of view, then also start feeding in and start building yourself as an athlete, because it's going to take an athlete if you want to start bowling at a high pace. And there's no reason, given the timescale you've given yourself, that you can't really be bowling at high pace in 4, 5, 6 years' time, which is what you're looking towards in terms of a timescale.
And question for both of you, really. You've seen a lot of players come through. Based on a player around about this kind of age and bowling at the kind of pace that he's bowling at, what's the best improvement you've seen over a period of time?
Well, I suppose one of the improvements that's, I should imagine, one of the most notable improvements was Darren Goff, actually. So I remember playing against Darren Goff at the outset of my career, before he really hit the big time. And he was medium pace-ish. He was a bit more of a medium pace, but not somebody that you would go, oh, hang on a minute, you know, this is going to be cheeky. And then based on some feedback from a couple of senior players and a couple of guys that have played international cricket, they felt that he had the capacity. So we're going back to his fixed and growth mindset. His fixed mindset was, you know, let's get the ball up there. Let's make it nibble a bit. It doesn't matter what pace I bowl. As long as I get the ball in the right areas, then I'll be all right. And then they said to him, well, you're never going to make the most out of your career. You might not even last as a county cricketer unless you start to bowl a lot quicker. And basically that mindset changed virtually overnight, and he just started to hoon it in. And obviously he had some good skills behind him, but you know, his commitment level to his delivery after those conversations had taken place really jettisoned him into, you know, top level international cricket and being the cornerstone of an England bowling attack for many years. And all that came about was him going, all right, I'm going to bowl properly quick now. And he absolutely nailed it. And obviously he had bits in his action from his medium pace days, which were all good and transferable. But, you know, sometimes going back to that fixed mindset and growth mindset discussion, sometimes it takes a bit of feedback and somebody to take it upon themselves to do something different. And all of a sudden, you're in business.
Levels, what about you? What's the best improvement you've seen directly?
Good question. We track the bowler's pace generally every half term, just to see how they're doing, and that's not necessarily something that is an enormously influential part of the program, but it's quite interesting to see how some people progress, and it does help in terms of flagging any potential issues if people are having a drop off in pace as well. So we do have pace logs for a lot of the guys anyway. over a season this winter, we've had a couple of guys who've gone up by 7-8 miles an hour, which is pretty good. These are guys who are kind of on a what we call an athletic development program, as well as being working for a winter bowling program and obviously having a summer season. So over a year, 7-8 miles an hour was achieved by a couple of guys, which we were really impressed with. Obviously, that's kind of relative to where they were. So if you were already kind of bowling early, mid-70s, 7 or 8 miles an hour would be an enormous progression. These guys were probably were bowling kind of mid-50s as younger bowlers, but again, that's pretty good progression. That's clearly well over a 10% improvement. But again, it is relative to where they were. So there's a lot of room for improvement. In this case, I don't see any reason why Sam couldn't be thinking of progressing in a similar manner by 10% a year, and that would see him hopefully in 3 or 4 years' time being bowling some nice pace, but it's clearly going to get harder to gain that 10% year in, year out. So as long as you focus on getting those processes right and you focus on making sure that the program you're sticking to and you are sticking to it is good, then you will get there to a reasonable pace in the long run.
Our next question is actually a follow-up, if you remember, from the other week. We had a question from Cameron asking how much he should train. But he's got back to us with some more information, because we gave him an answer last time. And he said he's come back with some information, and he wants to know more about the type of training he's doing. So here's his question. I practice 3 hours a day doing underarm drills and 1 hour using the sidearm, and almost no actual bowlers bowling at me. Can a sidearm replace the need for a bowler?
No, is the answer to that. Not totally. I think it's a fantastic bit of kit. It's equipment that we use a lot, and I'm sure Sam uses a lot and you use a lot as well, because it enables us to get volume in to practices without us killing our shoulders, which has been a constant bane of my life up until the invention of this wonderful piece of equipment.
Yeah. and
also it enables us to be able to deliver balls into good spaces, mimicking and replicating, yes, throwing, but more importantly, you know, if we get good at it, which is where I would encourage all coaches and any players that really want to help their mates get better, to try and start to bowl with it as well, and that takes a bit of practice. But if you can get bowling with it, then not only are you getting the balls delivered in the good areas, but also you're training the batsman to pick up visual cues, and those visual cues in terms of lines and lengths, which are absolutely essential to top level batting. You know, the ball speed at the top level is so fast from seamers that you have to be in a position where you can preempt what's coming along with a degree of certainty. And obviously, if we're just doing underarm feeds and we're not facing bowlers, then the more relevant and more specific that bowling action or that action that somebody is using the sidearm, the better it will be for them to how you train your visual cue skills in that initial stage where you're picking up ball release and picking up ball intention before ball release happens.
Yeah, that sidearm is definitely a godsend to me. I'm sure it is to you as well, Lavers. And I do encourage the guys who are more batters than bowlers to use the sidearm instead of trying to bowl their, you know, terrible non-spinning off-spin, which is usually the case. But how do you think, if someone did exclusively practice with underarm drills and sidearm, how do you think they would do when they went into a game situation? Do you think, how much can they transfer across, or is it quite a low transfer across?
It'd be interesting to see, wouldn't it? I think I think the key part for me on that would be how you manage that kind of ratio or separation of the two skills. And at the moment, there's obviously a weight towards those underarm drills, and you've probably got a reason for that. Which is fine, and I would like to think that as you move through the calendar year and as you get to different phases of the season, and we're obviously not 100% sure where exactly you're based and what your season kind of calendar is, but that might shift a little bit from one to the other and then potentially back again depending on what you're trying to achieve. So first of all, I'd be trying to make sure that if these are the only two things I've got available, then I'm getting the balance right between them. So if we're right in the middle of the season and all we're facing in matches is those fast bowlers running in and bowling pace, and we're looking to prepare for that, we probably don't want to be having an enormous weight towards the underarm drills, because that's not necessarily going to prepare us to see those cues and react at speed. Whereas the sidearm hopefully is going to replicate in a reasonable manner. And then similarly, if we're looking for technical changes and we're looking to sort of rebuild something, and it's hopefully, or ideally would be away from the season a little bit, then we maybe shift it back towards those underarm drills. So I think getting that balance first of all is a really important thing, and making sure that what you're doing is applicable to what you get out in the middle. I would also say, think of any other ways you can train. Think of anything else you can do to challenge yourself. If you've not got someone who can run in and bowl fast, so are there other ways that you can challenge your body and the way you move? So whether it's quick fire drills or simple throwdowns, which again aren't as ideal as bowling, but they're different again. So as many different methods as possible would be really good. But transferring and seeing how relevant other forms of practice are without any bowling. That would be one that I probably wouldn't be able to kind of comment on enormously, but it would be interesting to see how someone could do if there was a control and an experiment was put in place with people trolling against bowls and people training purely without them. One for you, David.
Absolutely. That's what I was thinking. What a great case study research project that would be. I mean, two things on underarms. People, as Sam quite rightly said, people use it as a bit of a technical remodel method. And also people use it as part of their pre-match routine method. So Michael Vaughan was massive for having 10 minutes of underarm bobble feeds to go through a variety of different drills. before he went into overarm stuff and then face bowlers. So it's part of his pre-match routine. The other thing I would say is you've obviously got an amazing work ethic and a desire to get better, which is fantastic. And it's great to hear the level of practice and the hours that you're putting in. What I would say is if you're not facing bowlers in nets, say, for all the way through the week, yet you're having this big bulk of practice, is it worthwhile substituting one of those four-hour days to see whether you can locate a game of cricket where you give yourself a chance of facing bowlers in a game? And, you know, in many parts of the world, being able to track down a game of cricket or being able to play for a wandering side or an invitation team or whatever the case may be is very achievable. So, you know, just something to contemplate and think about potentially and trying to track down a game of cricket for yourself.
Yeah, I was thinking that it doesn't even have to, I mean, the standard doesn't really matter, does it? It's just the fact that you're facing ball. Even if you go down the end of the street and someone's having a game of tape ball, do you know what I mean? If someone's running in and bowling, running in and bowling, you're getting that instant feedback of a bowler running in and you having to watch the ball and develop your method of picking up line and length and selecting the correct shot and then putting that shot into action. You know, those three things that you talked about a while ago, Gareth, you know, the missing two-thirds of batting that we focus so much on the technical side, we forget about those other two things often. But they're equally, if not more, important. So
It's a great process to practice, isn't it? You know, facing those bowlers. And as you say, it can be something that seems so informal in a game of tape ball. But, you know, how many world-class players over the years have been brought up on that, because it simulates and stimulates the right parts of our batting system. It gets us to, you know, pick up those visual cues that we talked about earlier. And also gives us that game sense. So I love your practice ethic. My challenge to you is, you know, can you shift some of the intensities and volumes around the different elements of your practice program presently to incorporate some match play? So when you do go into your proper matches, you are absolutely on the button. I think that would be something worth looking at.
It's Soapbox time now on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's a minute on the clock, and one of the members of the team gets to talk about whatever they like for that minute. This week, it's Sam Lavery. So, Lavers, over to you.
Okay, well, mine kind of relates back into a little bit to what we've mentioned so far in the growth mindset a little bit, and also we were talking about sidearms there and different ways of applying them into a program, but a couple of weeks ago, it's probably a month ago or so now, I had one of my boys was using the sidearm, and he had the disaster of thinking that someone drove a ball back at him and he'd stop it with the sidearm, and obviously disaster happened, sidearm snapped, handle off. This isn't good news. Now, from a fixed mind point of view, straight away, throw it in the bin, off you go. What I've decided to do was I decided to tape up the remaining handle, so I've lost the actual blue or red or whatever colour bit it is, and I've now got a sidearm that's about two-thirds the size. In fact, it turns out, with the handle wrapped up, this turns out to be a fantastic way of introducing players to the sidearm, getting younger guys a bit more familiar with batting against it, having a little bit less bounce and a little bit less pace, but it's a great transfer from working with a batter and a bowler, or sorry, working towards a batter and a bowler, or a batter and a full-length sidearm, which is obviously a lot quicker.
That is the end of the show for another week. Before we disappear completely, we just need to do a quick decision on the winner of this week's competition. That is the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the questions on offer this week were Sam's question about bowling faster, always a classic, and Cameron's question about using the sidearm in lieu of using a bowler. So which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I prefer Cameron's one this week, and now I'm just checking. Did he win a prize the other week?
Oh, do you know what? I can't remember.
Then if he has, then it's double your money, isn't it? Yeah, in there.
I'll tell you what it was, Gareth. Due to technical difficulties, we didn't have a winner last week.
That is true. So fill your boots this week, Cameron, because your question was absolutely outstanding. Really good. Hopefully we've given you a few bits of clues and answers, and you'll shift your training to take you to a new level. So, yeah, all yours, mate.
And, Gareth, if someone wanted to get in touch with the show and send in their question and have their chance to win the prize, how could they do that?
They could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. You can, as is the modern way, you can find us on social media as well. We've got Facebook over at facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and Twitter is @pitchvisionacad. You can listen to the show every week by subscribing. It's free. It comes out every Friday. Just go to your favourite podcast app, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. Just tap on that subscribe button. It works on your phone, on your tablet, on your computer, whatever you've got. And speaking of your computer, if you go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link, you'll see all the old show notes. You'll be able to stream the show directly from the website, or you'll be able to download the file and stick it into whatever device you have handy. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Labus.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys.